Chapter 8 Snape Victorious. Harry could not move a muscle. He lay there beneath the invisibility cloak, feeling the blood from his nose flow, hot and wet, over his face, listening to the voices and footsteps in the corridor beyond. His immediate thought was that someone surely would check the compartments before the train departed again. But at once came the dispiriting realization that even if somebody looked into the compartment, he would be neither seen nor heard. His best hope was that somebody else would walk in and step on him. Harry had never hated Malfoy more than as he lay there like an absurd turtle on its back, blood dripping sickeningly into his open mouth. What a stupid situation to have landed himself in! And now the last few footsteps were dying away. Everyone was shuffling along the dark platform outside. He could hear the scraping of trunks and the loud babble of talk. Ron and Hermione would think that he had left the train without them. Once they arrived at Hogwarts and took their places in the Great Hall, looked up and down the Gryffindor table a few times, and finally realized that he was not there, he, no doubt, would be halfway back to London. He tried to make a sound, even a grunt, but it was impossible. Then he remembered that some wizards, like Dumbledore, could perform spells without speaking. So he tried to summon his wand, which had fallen out of his hand, by saying the words, "Accio wand," over and over again in his head. But nothing happened. He thought he could hear the rustling of the trees that surrounded the lake, and the far-off hoot of an owl. But no hint of a search being made, or even, he despised himself slightly for hoping it, panicked voices wondering where Harry Potter had gone. A feeling of hopelessness spread through him as he imagined the convoy of thestral-drawn carriages trundling up to the school and the muffled yells of laughter issuing from whichever carriage Malfoy was riding in, where he could be recounting his attack on Harry to Crabbe, Goyle, Zabini, and Pansy Parkinson. The train lurched, causing Harry to roll over onto his side. Now he was staring at the dusty underside of the seats instead of the ceiling. The floor began to vibrate as the engine roared to life. The express was leaving, and nobody knew he was still on it. Then he felt his invisibility cloak fly off him, and a voice overhead said, "Watch you, Harry!" There was a flash of red light, and Harry's body unfroze. He was able to push himself into a more dignified sitting position, hastily wipe the blood off his bruised face with the back of his hand, and raise his head to look up at Tonks, who was holding the invisibility cloak she had just pulled away.
"We'd better get out of here quickly," she said as the train windows became obscured with steam and they began to move out of the station. "Come on, we'll jump."
Harry hurried after her into the corridor. She pulled open the train door and leapt onto the platform, which seemed to be sliding underneath them as the train gathered momentum. He followed her, staggered a little on landing, then straightened up in time to see the gleaming scarlet steam engine pick up speed, round the corner, and disappear from view. The cold night air was soothing on his throbbing nose. Tonks was looking at him. He felt angry and embarrassed that he had been discovered in such a ridiculous position. Silently, she handed him back the invisibility cloak.
"Who did it?"
"Draco Malfoy," said Harry bitterly. "Thanks for, well..."
"No problem," said Tonks without smiling. From what Harry could see in the darkness, she was as mousy-haired and miserable-looking as she had been when he had met her at the Burrow.
"I can fix your nose if you stand still."
Harry did not think much of this idea. He had been intending to visit Madame Pomfrey, the matron, in whom he had a little more confidence when it came to healing spells. But it seemed rude to say this, so he stayed stock still and closed his eyes.
"Episky," said Tonks.
Harry's nose felt very hot and then very cold. He raised a hand and felt it gingerly. It seemed to be mended.
"Thanks a lot." "You'd better put that cloak back on and we can walk up to the school," said Tonks, still unsmiling.
As Harry swung his cloak back over himself, she waved her wand. An immense silvery four-legged creature erupted from it and streaked off into the darkness. "Was that a Patronus?" asked Harry, who had seen Dumbledore send messages like this.
"Yes, I'm sending word to the castle that I've got you, or they'll worry. Come on, we'd better not dawdle.
They set off toward the lane that led to the school.
How did you find me? I noticed you hadn't left the train, and I knew you had that cloak. I thought you might be hiding for some reason. When I saw the blinds were drawn down on that compartment, I thought I'd check.
But what are you doing here anyway? Harry asked.
I'm stationed in Hogsmeade now to give the school extra protection, said Tonks.
Is it just you who's stationed up here, or...
No, Proudfoot, Savage and Dawlish are here too.
Dawlish?
That Auror Dumbledore attacked last year? That's right.
They trudged up the dark, deserted lane, following the freshly made carriage tracks. Harry looked sideways at Tonks under his cloak. Last year she had been inquisitive, to the point of being a little annoying at times. She had laughed easily, she had made jokes. Now she seemed older and much more serious and purposeful. Was this all the effect of what had happened at the Ministry? He reflected uncomfortably that Hermione would have suggested he say something consoling about Sirius to her, that it hadn't been her fault at all, but he couldn't bring himself to do it. He was far from blaming her for Sirius's death. It was no more her fault than anyone else's, and much less than his. But he did not like talking about Sirius if he could avoid it. And so they tramped on through the cold night in silence, Tonks's long cloak whispering on the ground behind them. Having always travelled there by carriage, Harry had never before appreciated just how far Hogwarts was from Hogsmeade Station. With great relief, he finally saw the tall pillars on either side of the gates, each top with a winged boar. He was cold, he was hungry, and he was quite keen to leave this new, gloomy Tonks behind. But when he put out a hand to push open the gates, he found them chained shut.
"Aloha Mora,"
he said confidently, pointing his wand at the padlock. But nothing happened.
"That won't work on these," said Tonks. "Dumbledore bewitched them himself."
Harry looked around.
"I could climb a wall," he suggested. "No, you couldn't," said Tonks flatly. "Anti-intruder jinxes on all of them. Security's been tightened 100-fold this summer."
"Well then," said Harry, starting to feel annoyed at her lack of helpfulness, "I suppose I'll just have to sleep out here and wait for morning."
"Someone's coming down for you," said Tonks. "Look."
A lantern was bobbing at the distant foot of the castle. Harry was so pleased to see it, he felt he could even endure Filch's wheezy criticisms of his tardiness and rants about how his timekeeping would improve with the regular application of thumbscrews. It was not until the glowing yellow light was 10 feet away from them, and Harry had pulled off his invisibility cloak so that he could be seen, that he recognized with a rush of pure loathing the uplit hook nose and long, black, greasy hair of Severus Snape.